Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Would You Date a Scientist? I'm joined today by Musami Mishra. Hi Musami, how are you doing?
Hi Wendy, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Very good. I was just going to say again that it's hump day today. We're both feeling like we need the weekend. I do like to ask twice, like actually, how have you been? How has the world been treating you?
Yeah, it's been a good week. It's just me and my husband, so we had a nice couple of weekends. We went on vacation in Iceland and before that in Spain. Yeah, so it was great.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a dream. It is. Iceland is something that's just beyond words. Like, there's no place like it. You should definitely visit.
Did you go into like the lagoons and stuff like that?
Oh, yes. They were heavenly. Yeah. Wow. There are two lagoons there. One is Blue Lagoon. Another one is Sky Lagoon.
Yeah.
So Sky Lagoon is pretty new, but it was amazing. Both of them. Yeah. We didn't have to see a glimpse of Northern Lights. So that was just cherry on top. Yeah.
If anybody listening wants to take me to Iceland, I'm up for it. If anyone in Iceland wants me to come over and do a live episode of Would You Date a Scientist, I'm also up for that.
Please do, people.
So let's get started. What's your favorite piece of tech?
Oh, my favorite piece of tech is my smartphone, actually. I really can't imagine. And I think I'm part of that generation which actually saw when this piece of technology was introduced. Like, we didn't have any phones in our house when we were growing up in India. But then one day there was this landline connection. Then next year we had mobile phones in our in our house. And the communication part became so easy.
Yeah.
And as a family, we were able to connect with each other a lot. But that was just the start of it. In the years that followed, there has been so much advancement and so much new. Like, you have calculator, you have camera, you have your diary, you have everything in just one little piece of technology. And that is something that's personally very useful to me. Like, I do everything in my phone. Like, earlier you would just scramble for a piece of paper and pen if you want to make some notes or anything. You can make reservations online, you can do everything. Like, my entire Iceland trip was booked on my phone, so yes. Very, very happy with that piece of technology.
I do fully agree with you. Yeah, I've got everything on there now. I used to still take notes on a pad, but now I just use my notes because I converted to everything to Apple last year.
That's very, very good. Yeah.
And I've literally just learned that if you drag your cursor to the bottom right, your notes come up. Just learned that. There you go. Everybody, this is my gift to you. Drag your cursor to the bottom right of your Mac.
Thank you, Wendy, for that.
There you go. Great. So you're predictive analytics manager for data science at Vodafone Business.
Yeah.
I knew somebody who worked at Vodafone for many years. Great company. Yeah. Can you talk me through your career and how you got into data science, please?
Yeah, of course. So my journey into data science has been very natural, I think. Like, I didn't expect or didn't plan to become a data scientist when I was, studying in uni or when I was doing my engineering. But my life and my career choices led me towards it, even though I didn't know at that time that the choices that I was making or the projects that I was working on would do that. So, for example, I did computer science engineering as my bachelor's. And after that, I got hired by IBM. Although my profile was that of a Java developer, but the project that I was assigned to was more of a data analytics oriented project.
Right.
So I think that was just a stroke of luck that was the first project that I was assigned to was related to data analysis. It was a very simple fraud detection model and if-else based model, really, but it had a huge impact on business in terms of how the assets were used / misused by the employees. But there I was more on a technical side, and a lot of things related to business were not visible to me. And that was sort of giving me anxiety because I think because of my control issues, I really need to know what I'm doing, why I'm doing, who I'm doing it for.
Yeah, so, it gives you a bigger picture, doesn't it?
Exactly. I need to see the big picture. Yeah, I need to see the big picture. So to pursue that, and I decided to go into business side of things. So I left my job at IBM after 2 years and, got enrolled in a business school, got my MBA from there. And then during MBA, actually, I saw that I was more interested in courses that had to do with numbers or data or maths. So like finance was my favorite subject. The next one that followed was market research. So I was doing very well in all the market research courses where, you know, you have to actually do the primary research bit, collect data and gain customer insights using quantitative methods, regression, you know, decision trees, all of that. That was the first time I was introduced to that concept during my market research classes during MBA. And that's when actually I also got a chance to first use it in industry. So I had a summer internship with Vodafone back in India, where I did a small market research project for 2 months, doing focus group studies, doing customer interviews, compiling all the data, having a control group, having a target group, and, you know, doing all that ANOVA analysis to find out the insights. And that was continued in my job as well. So I was hired by Vodafone during my summer internship once I completed my degree, I was ready to join Vodafone, and they had made an offer before I graduated. So that's how I went to Vodafone in India, and I was just working in this field, basically because of the courses I took, because of the decisions I made. It was a very natural flow. Like, I did not wanted to be labeled as data scientist back then, but yes, that's what I was doing essentially. Mm-hmm. And after that, a very big change happened in my life. I got married. I had to move countries. So I left my job in India and moved to UK. And here again, I think the major part of my struggle started here. Right. Because you're in a new country, you have gotten married, on personal and professional front both, you are struggling to, you know, get a sense of what's happening around you. Getting a job in a new country without any experience is a big challenge, especially in data science field. Data science field is challenging enough. Yeah. To get into, but you know, if you have no background, it's further more challenging. I think I did well. I worked hard. I studied a lot. I prepared a lot for the interviews. I connected to a lot of people on LinkedIn, just shamelessly pushed messages around that, please, Brilliant. Can you give me a referral? Yeah, that was the one bit that really helped me land a lot of interviews. You know, went to alumni events in London for, you know, wherever I could find support, or attended a lot of AIML conferences, listened to what was going on in the industry, brushed up my skills, and yeah, landed a job. Even though the first job that I landed as a data scientist was paying me much less mm-hmm. than what I was getting back in India with an MBA degree. But I was not very bothered about that, because all I wanted at that time was to learn and grow. And
get your foot in the door.
Yeah, exactly. And so I didn't think that, yes, it's beneath me. Like, everybody else told me, like my parents, my father especially, he's very much invested in my career and he's the reason why I'm here. So he was a little bit sad that, you know, kid, like, you could do a lot better. I know that. And I was like, yeah, I know that too. And I will do a lot better. But yes, I can't refuse this opportunity, and just let me go there. And soon enough, like after 11 months, I was back where I started and where I left. I was back in Vodafone. I was at a good position, which I was happy with, and everybody else was happy with. And I think, that's my journey so far. I'm here, and yeah, it was fraught with struggles, which we will get into. struggles of different nature, but I think the main key to getting through any sort of challenge or struggle in life is essentially the same.
Sure.
So yeah, we can, you know, talk about it as we go.
Cool. So, I mean, bravo to you for sticking with it, for doing it, and for taking that pay cut as well. That must have been that. I mean, I completely understand it. So let's first of all talk about you coming from India.
I get
messages from so many people asking me, can I help them come to the UK? They've, you know, people in Africa, people in India, like so super smart that they would do wonders over here. But it's very, very difficult to come. How did you come over? And could you talk me through through that process? It might help somebody else.
Of course. So, you know, as I mentioned, I came here with my husband. So I think for your view, for your listeners, the more relevant story will be how my husband came here first, because I came on a dependent visa. So it was coming here was the easier part for me, getting a job, not so much. But my husband did both of these things on his own. So he came here on his own, got a job here on his own. So, yes, I can talk you through his journey, which I feel is very interesting as well.
Perfect, thank you.
So yeah, he was doing he was a data engineer back in India with Western Union, and then he was applying to a lot of different openings in international locations. And as he said, he was just doing it for fun. Like, he didn't expect that, you know, he will ever get hired in London or Canada or wherever he was applying for. Yes, he had good skill set. He was mentoring and teaching people there in India to get into data engineering. So he had vast wealth of knowledge. So the first step is obviously to skill, to gain the relevant skills which are in demand in whichever country you want to go. So like in UK, there is a lot of demand for data science, data engineering, Java, and, you know, JavaScript, these sort of skills which are relevant in the market. So first do your research, find which skill set is in demand in your destination country or the country you are targeting, and then start applying on LinkedIn or messaging the recruiters on LinkedIn. Like, you can find very easily, it's very easy to in nowadays with social media to, you know, reach out to people and connect with them. So what he did, he reached out to somebody he in Accenture UK, and they were hiring, and they were like, I think if you message 50 people, 10 of like at least for if 45 of them say that we can't sponsor a visa for you, at least 5 will say that yes, we can sponsor a visa for you.
Oh, wow, that's good to know.
Yeah. So a lot of time you'll be disappointed that yes, visa sponsorship is not there, but there are a lot many companies who are ready to sponsor visa if you have got the talent, if you can, you know, clear their interview rounds, you know, of course, and they can also give you a lot of flexibility to work remotely, even from your home country or wherever in the world. Like, I know my friends who are in companies where they are said that just tell us which country you want to work from and we'll get the visa for you.
Wow.
Yeah, there are such companies in world at the moment. Like, most of them obviously work out of San Francisco Bay Area, but yeah, there are.
Okay.
And it's worth reaching out to people on LinkedIn, you know.
Absolutely.
Talk to them if they can put in referral for you and things like that.
So in my experience, people companies who are offering sponsorship don't use recruiters, because then they would have to pay a sponsorship fee and a recruiter fee. So what I recommend to people is make a list of companies that you'd like to work for. As you've just said, contact them directly. And I think some have got a quota that they need to, like, they've put in place themselves. They've got to have X amount of people sponsored. So I think it's a lot to do with timing, absolutely to do with the skills, as you've said. And it's going to be a lot of those bigger companies like Accenture that are going to be able to do that. You know, Deloitte, any of the big four will probably be doing that as well. brilliant. That's excellent. So your husband got sponsored by a company to come over here. And then because you're married to him, you came over on the dependent visa.
That's how it happened.
Great. There's also another way that you can get, you can come to work over here. If you do your master's or any studying, then they've now extended that for 2 years so that you can work for 2 years after you finish studying, which is brilliant. Thank you for that. It's really good to know that I'm giving the right advice to people. But it's just, I just feel, because I do a Twitter Spaces, a Tech UK, shout out to the Tech UK guys. I do a Twitter Spaces on a Monday evening, and then I'll speak on there and I'll say, I've got this job and this job. I can help you this way. I can help you this. Come to LinkedIn and talk to me. And that, and so many people are messaging me and I'm like, oh, I really wish that I could help you. But I just probably sound like, no, can't do it. So what I do now is, I've said, I've got a podcast. Please listen to that because it's probably going to give you so much information. And now we're actually getting some answers for them. So, guys, I really hope that that's of help to you. So what other struggles have you come across?
Well, I said, when I came to UK, getting my first job was a bit of struggle, and because of the different background that I had. But there are people who are willing to take chance on you. So I think the best thing that I did was, reach out to as many recruiters on LinkedIn as I could.
Yeah.
Because that really helps. And, getting your CV in the right format, because nowadays CVs get rejected by an automated program.
Yes, and they do.
that's the first challenge, isn't it? So just keep your CVs as simple as possible. Do not use a lot of tables or formatting.
I've actually got a CV template available for anybody if they want to have it for free. Please just drop me a message. Yeah. I also do coaching. I also do career coaching, so I can offer all of this for you. Get that little plug in there. I also offer it for you. So, like, it's really difficult, especially at the moment, knowing what the market's like, applying for jobs, finding out what your transferable skills are and getting that on the CV, writing the CV, interview process, everything, the mindset that you're in. And, it's just so hard. So anybody hit me up for that coaching if you need
it. And the biggest challenge, I think, what I feel is, like, I forget to put things on my CV. Like, oh, did I do that? Like, you forget your own achievements sometimes.
Exactly.
And that's really frustrating at times, because I don't know why it happens with me, but I think I have known a lot of other people, especially women who are who tend to forget their achievements. I mean, I was just having my personal development discussion with my manager the other day, and he was reminding me, but you also have done this. Why isn't this mentioned in your achievements for this fiscal year? And I was like, oh, right, I did this. And that sort of happens a lot, I think, to a lot of us. So, be sure to remember all your achievements and put them in your CV.
Absolutely. And look, your CV is an ongoing piece of work. You shouldn't just update your CV when you're looking for a new job or you're annoyed at your current job. Yeah. It should, every time you do an achievement, even if you just make a note of it on the bottom of your CV and then save it and go back to it later, don't forget those achievements. It's really important. So it's an ongoing document. It's not just every now and then. And I think that needs to be worked on. What other advice would you give to somebody just starting out and wanting to get into data science?
How to get into data science is something which a lot of people ask me, but before they ask that, I think they should ask themselves that, why do they want to get into data science? Of course, data science is a cool field to be in. It is in demand, and the demand for AI and ML will only grow with time. It is a good mix of both business and technology. So it gives you a flavor of both, right? So ask yourself if you want to be in that sort of situation, if you're ready for the challenges, because being a data scientist is, in today's world, it's like being a person who knows business, who knows maths, who knows statistics, who knows research methodologies, who knows technology, who knows coding, who knows Python, who knows SQL, like cloud, everything, right? So like, be prepared for that, first of all. Like, yes, you will have to gain a lot of skills in and just apply all of them in tandem so that it's making sense for the business.
Yep.
So first answer that if you're ready for that. Then how? So data scientists usually require a lot of credentials. So the traditional approach will be, you know, to get a uni degree in the relevant field, do master's, get a PhD, get hired by the various recruitment drives, you know, that the companies do. But then there is another way also, which I think a lot more people, which is a lot less, I think, expensive, a lot less time taking as well. You know, there are like multiple resources available online, both paid and free. There are online courses. You can read a lot of books. And I think, although many people do a lot of certifications online, I personally feel that reading a book or, you know, solving the books on statistics and going through them is much more, gives you much more deeper knowledge than, mm-hmm. than doing some online course of, you know, certain duration. So yeah, read as many books as you can, connect with people, listen to the talks, the various AI conferences, ML conferences that happen where industry leaders come and they talk literally what they want in their data science team. And you can, plan your skill around that. And this is what I did actually when I was finding a job in the UK. I connected with people. I listened to their talks, the conferences, and all of that. And of course, there are other ways. There are so much online. Like, you can do Kaggle competitions.
Yep.
You can practice your Python and SQL there. Meet different people, ask them to put in a referral for you. You know, start cold messaging people on LinkedIn and, you know, be just abrasive about it. Like, I'm sorry to bother you, but, you know, I'm so and so, I'm looking for a data science role. Like, if do you have anything for me or something like that? And, you know, if you message 25 people, 5 will come back. Like, it's the world is not such a bad place that there are many people ready to help you. And that was amazing. The community that I found on LinkedIn, you know, and because and that really helped me make the switch in my journey. And lastly, do not think something is beneath you. Like, because when you have masters, you have PhD, you feel that you deserve a certain way of things, or you deserve a certain pay in life, and that's true, you do. But if you really do, it will come with time. But if you want to just get into the door, or if you're making a switch after, like, because I've met people who have worked for 10 years in another industry and now want to make a switch to data science.
Yes.
Be ready to take a pay cut. It's all right.
100%. You're going to have to restart learning those skills.
Yeah.
How to work within the team, what's exactly expected of you. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Do you think it's important to go through the master's and PhD route?
Well, it certainly helps. Like, it certainly helps, because a lot of the things that I learned during my master's, when I was doing the relevant courses, or, you know, they certainly add value when you are reading certain topics in book or doing certain online courses. Mm-hmm. Or so that definitely help. But that being said, it's I'm not saying that you can't gain the same level of knowledge on your own. You definitely can. And there are so many boot camps going on. There's so much available. Like, if you're open to learning, nothing can stop you. And a degree it helps, but it's not the only help that you can get. And I think nowadays companies are more open to hiring data scientists from different backgrounds, from diverse backgrounds. Now,
absolutely.
It's like, I think two or three years ago, in all the data science job descriptions, like in 70% of them, a PhD was in necessary requirement, but now it's only in good to have requirement. So that shift I can see in the job market as well.
If so, I get a role, if I get a job spec through that I need to fill, I'll speak to the people. And I'm like, you don't need a degree. do you really need somebody to have a PhD to do this role? Or can somebody with the right skills do this role? And they're like, no, you're right.
Exactly. And I think, when I say this, it's from my personal experience in the corporate world. Yeah. Like, you don't get as much time to do all the research, follow all the methodologies, and then do things certain proper way. Nobody will give you that time. Yeah. So, like, being a PhD and doing things the scientific way is nice, but just I don't think that that's what's required in today's fast-moving world, especially in big corporates where your stakeholders won't even understand what you're talking about. Like, they don't understand the nuances of your results. Like, there is a probability that this can be deduced out of this study.
Yeah.
Your stakeholders will want to oversimplify things. Like, okay, if A happens, B happens. But that's not something that can be said in data science fully. Like, we can only establish a probability of causality. We can never establish 100% causality that yes, if A happens, B will certainly happen. We can't say that. Yeah. But that's something like very, very funny to me because it happens all the time.
All the time. And I think I've worked with one company where the stakeholders understood what data science was and knew the language. One out of the God knows how many thousands of jobs that I've been doing. What's your favorite project that you've worked on?
Well, my favorite project that I've worked on was in my previous company. So there I was creating a model to mimic the classification done by a big team of human beings. So I'm an alien, but yeah, like it was a big classification problem, it was a manual classification done by people, a group of people, and we wanted to replicate that for future transactions. It was like a finance problem, like accounting problem, in my previous company. But it was fun to work on because it involved a lot of dependencies. It involved a lot of it had a very elegant solution of neural network, a layered neural network model. So that was the first time I worked on, on such an advanced model. And that's, I think, any data scientist's dream to really work on such sophisticated models in a corporate setting. And plus, I had a good team. My colleagues were amazing. There were two of us working on that problem. And it was really great. It was fun, to work on that.
Was it? You know, you come from India and you didn't have any experience in the UK. Was it difficult for you to make that transition, or was it just, data?
No, it was very difficult. It was very difficult. So I think a lot of the times I was I used to go to the last round of interviews, and a lot of times I used to lose out to some other candidate who had UK experience and relevant experience, and that happens a lot. And I think there is no way around it. The only thing that you can do is probably keep working on some freelance projects, because then they will give you an exposure to different countries, to international projects. And that also helps you work with different sort of teams from diverse backgrounds, because that's something which you need. Like, if you come from just one country, getting that sort of international exposure is very, very important. So till you are finding your feet in a different location, you can just try to work on as many freelance projects as you can, and that really helps.
Brilliant. You spoke about diversity there. What is your experience with diversity both in India and in the UK?
Yeah, so I think diversity is a big thing across the globe at the moment, like, because people who come from a different background than the than what's the norm, they always face some sort of challenges anywhere. So be it India or UK, you gotta prepare yourself that yes, if it's at X level of difficulty for a normal person, it will be at X plus one level of difficulty for me. And that's how the world works. So first part is acceptance and prepare yourself. Second part is try to make things easier for the people who come after you. Like, if I have faced certain challenges, I would definitely make sure that others won't have to face the same. And that's how the world becomes a better place with time.
Like, I love that.
Yeah, Rome was not built in a day, right? So, So for example, when I was in my previous company, Avanade, I did data science for women boot camps because there were so many young women who wanted to get into data science. So I used to, after work every Fridays, we used to just meet in a room and we used to teach Python to each other. There was this one colleague of mine, she used to teach data engineering to them. So upskilling each other and helping each other is definitely how you grow and get rid of the stigma of that diversity problem or the challenges, whatever you want to call it. I think that the sense of community really helps.
I think the data science community as a whole is just wonderful. Everybody wants to help. Everybody wants to make the world a better place. Yeah. It's just so refreshing. Why can't everyone be like that? And what do you think data science is going to look like in the future?
Well, you know what? As I go through my journey in data science, I feel that in the future, being a data scientist will also mean that you're a very good communicator, because that's the biggest gap that data science as a career, as an industry is facing at the moment, that we are sitting on great insights, but we can't communicate them to the business stakeholders so that those insights can be actioned upon. And the same frustration is from business stakeholders as well, because they have invested a lot in data science and they are not getting that sort of insight for what they are paying such huge sums of money for. So I think something's got to give in this sort of gap. And I think for in the future, simple models, understandable AI, good communication, these things are going to play a very important part. And that's, again, one place where I feel blessed to have a business plus tech degree. So, I think a mixture of both of these is very important, because you need to learn the language of your stakeholders and convey your results in simple terms in the form of business. And I know that a lot of data scientists are very averse to this thing, because when you oversimplify models, you lose the actual insight behind it. Yeah. So you can't oversimplify things in data science. But I mean, that's the problem. You have to find a balance somewhere. Use visualizations or use anecdotes or examples to drive your point home with stakeholders, and that's very important, the art of communication.
Okay, interesting. Do you think as time goes on and data science becomes more used by the norm for every company, every whatever, then it can be taught how to do things like that in schools, start them early? I mean, it's the sexiest job at the moment. You've got to start somewhere. Why would you start?
Yeah.
Why would you start looking into that at uni level? I think, and I can't remember being taught how to communicate. And I don't think I could communicate until 30s. You're not taught, along with how to pay your council tax, and you're not taught these things. It's ridiculous.
To a point where can we teach this to students from school? Well, we actually do kind okay. of like in the if you look at the like I don't know school in India, so I'm not sure about the UK school system, but in India we used to have statistics, calculus and everything. We have that in our math so. curriculum. Yeah, so it's there and everybody has to go through that ordeal of understanding trigonometry, of understanding statistics, and all of those things. So when I was, reintroducing myself to data science, I would say reintroducing because a lot of the concepts were, I could remember from my school days as well. So initially what you can do is you can teach the mathematical part to children, because that's something which is I think if you get that part, the other things can come.
And I suppose if somebody is flourishing, if they're really excelling at statistics and analytics, then they can go on the journey.
You can learn Python, it's just a language. You can learn SQL, it's just a language. Again, it's just a piece of tech. Getting a technical skill is not as challenging as understanding what goes on behind it. You need to understand how those formulas work, how logistical regression formula works, how a sigmoid function works and all of those things. That's, I think, the difficult part in data science. And if you can get that if you're used to reading about them and if you're used to looking at those sort of graphs and formulas since the childhood, I think things become much, much more easier for you later in your career as a data scientist, I think.
Excellent. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that. Maybe because I wasn't that good and I was in the lower sets that I haven't seen it. I mean, this was like 30 years ago, so I'm sure it's changed since then. Right, so there's lots of billionaires in the world that shouldn't be there. Do you think that one of them, or some of them, could be making super villains, like AI super villains? If they are, how are we going to stop them? And what is their punishment going to be?
Well, AI supervillain, I think that's the stuff of that's the stuff of science fiction, definitely, because trust me, it's very difficult to teach a model to even predict whether the next deal will be losing that or winning that. So it's very difficult. Don't have that sort of data. Probably we might have, billionaires probably might have that sort of data with all the surveillance and all the things that are going on in the world. So yeah, probably they can build it. But I really think that it's something we cannot worry at right now. I think it's something we should worry for way past in the future. But if something like that happens, I think it will be something of an Ultron Iron Man situation, that you're creating something which is, there's bound to be some sort of fallacy in the algorithm. And I think that AI will punish the billionaire first before the world can punish themselves.
So you're on the same wavelength as me. So if there is an Iron Man, how are we going to fight that? Because we've not started building anything to fight it yet. We've not got actual Avengers.
Yeah, we have not got it. And I think, it's very difficult to build something at that level. But if it's done, then I think world has other billionaires who will be willing to fight, and probably they'll band up together and be Avengers. Yes. And we'll be on their payrolls as data scientists, writing code.
And I'll be their recruiter. Oh, amazing. Musami, thank you so much for joining me. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. I forgot to ask if you've got anything to plug.
No, I think for anybody wanting to get into data science, it's a really great career path, and it's very interesting where you can, have insight into business and technology. You can be on the crossroads of both and connect with technical people, connect with business people, and see the impact of your work. And I think that it's something very, very amazing it's a great field to work in. I feel very blessed personally. And if anybody wants to reach out to me personally, they can, you know, connect with me on LinkedIn. And we'll be very much happy to help.
Oh, bless you. Thank you so much, Ms. Zomi. You take care and I'll speak to you soon.
And you. Bye.